what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Nights at the Round Table. I am here with my boy, Andreas Moss. I know him as Jonathan Tulane.
Hello, hello.
Homie for a good minute.
10 years.
10 years. So when close. Is it coming?
It's
when
coming in, I don't know what exact month, but 2020, 10 years.
Look, here's the amazing thing about Jonathan, which is what I call him. I've been a fan of his for a long time. True. From when I first saw him, I'm like, this white boy can freaking sing. He was one of those dudes that everything he does on CD, he can do live effortlessly. He's not like trying at all. It just comes and he is like beyond talented. If you haven't heard any of his stuff, his older stuff is under Jonathan Tulane, but now it's Andreas Moss.
Also, funny story, random, but one of the times that you watched me live, one of the only times you watched me live, I had an allergic reaction to the stage smoke and literally
was that
could
the,
not get a note.
It
was
at
Grand
show?
Canyon University.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, and it was like a whole line of people in the back, like watching me. And I was like, why now does this have to happen to me?
Yeah, I knew you're genius though. It didn't matter.
I was like, dad, come to life.
Yo, but as you guys have seen the title, you know, of this podcast, I'm sure there is going to be speculation, interest in all kinds of facets. And I want to preface this from jump. This is not going to be a debate. This is not a tune in and watch Manny degrade or come against someone in that way. My position in this, the reason I wanted to do this, and let me be honest, coming forthright. We've talked about this, me and the crew, for a minute now. But there's been a feeling of, at least with me personally, I'm not going to speak for them. There's been a little bit of fear. And I don't know why, because I'm not a fearful person. I've kind of like threw my middle finger to the world a long time ago.
It's a taboo subject.
Yeah, it's very much a that. But I think it's more so because I haven't come to a resolution in my own heart about the whole topic. But I've come to some resolutions or that have been contrary to how I felt in the past. Mm. Look, when I first got married, me and Ange would have these crazy fights because my wife has been raised with homosexuality in her life. Half of the family is gay, and I didn't know that. I've never really met nor conversed at all with anyone, my whole life growing up. So I was very staunch. I was very religious. I had zero empathy. I had zero desire to understand. I had zero desire to have a conversation. I remember one argument we got in Miami, and it was. I literally told her this, and if Kenny, my brother-in-law, ever hears this, forgive me. I love you so much. You know that. But I remember telling her, I don't even know why your brother goes to church. It don't matter.
Right.
I was literally telling her, it don't count. And if he tells me he loves God, doesn't count. And if he tells me he wants to serve God, doesn't count. I don't care what he says. I don't care how he feels. To me, none of it counted.
Right.
All because all I saw was that he was gay. Mm-hmm. And it angered her so much. And I didn't get it. I thought I was being so righteous. I thought I was being so like, I'm following the word, you know, I'm so, you know, whatever. And then as I got to know Kenny, as I got to know all my family that was gay, as I got to be introduced to friends that were gay, friends who told me they were gay and they loved Jesus, that was a mind fuck. Mm. I started realizing, holy crap, these people that I am meeting love like me, talk like me, walk like me. The experiences that they're having with Jesus sound very similar to mine. Everything that they're telling me sounds like what I tell other people. And I started having to really think and do some soul searching, like, what is making me so angry? Mm-hmm. What is making me so... And maybe some of you are feeling this right now because I haven't said anything negative towards my friend. Like, there's believers that are, and I love you, for real, I do love you, but there's believers that are just waiting for you to just be like, you better say something. you better tell them they're wrong. You better tell them they're this. You better say something. Stand up for the gospel. I was that. And now I stand up for the gospel all day long. But in this particular area, I have met so many amazing people that has made me sit back, take stock, and really completely redefine the way I view this topic, because I find it very hard for me to sit on any kind of righteous throne and tell someone who's telling me that they have an authentic relationship with Jesus that they're lying to me, or that they're wrong, or that they're whatever. When they're experiencing God, I mean, I've had my boy tell me prophecies that have come true. I've had my boys tell me visions of Jesus, like real things, like not fake things, real things. Maybe some of you may be thinking, oh, the devil can show himself in many ways. Okay. Right. Okay. Prophecies start coming true. I start really taking a step back. And again, I don't want to draw lines, nor do I feel like I have to, because our relationship between each of us and God is separate. It's an individual thing. But I have to take a step back and be like, man, maybe I'm not doing this right.
Right.
Maybe I'm not approaching this right. Maybe I'm not thinking about it all the way, because I care about these people. Mm. And I think I saw them not as human beings. And when I say them, let me be forthcoming and apologetic right now. I don't know all the terminology. I don't know the right things, like the right ways to say things. So if I say things in a wrong way, correct me, or you can correct me in the comments. I'm not trying to do anything on purpose or trying to be disrespectful. So please be gracious with me on that. But I didn't see people. Yeah. I just saw quote unquote sin.
Right.
And as I think about it now, I'm like, how much spiritual balls do I have? A sinner, a full-blown sinner, knowing the crap that I deal with, knowing what I do when nobody's looking, where do I get the balls to look at another human being as just sin? Right. Like as if they're nothing but that.
Right.
That is the preface to why I want to have a conversation with my boy Jonathan, because I've known him, we're going on a decade now, and I've been a fan of him since day one as a person, as a musician. He's been a good friend to me, and his story is freaking crazy, which I'm going to let him tell his story. And my hope in this is to have the conversation, is to start the conversation, because believe it or not, when I get messages on our Knights of the Roundtable page, more of them are about this topic than anything else, which made me think, holy crap, This is a conversation that a lot of people, well, I don't know if I want to say a lot of people, the people who have reached out to me want to have, or at least want us to at least bring to the table and have that conversation and not be afraid of it. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to have this conversation, talk with you. I know you, I love you. And I wanted you to tell your story and we can talk about this, because I know whether you are gay or not, whether you're angry towards that topic or not, his story is one that everyone can relate to very much so. If you put the bats down, you put the rocks down, you put the anger down, you put it all down, and just for this brief moment in time, listen as a human being talks, which is something that I had to do a long time ago. So anyways, Jonathan... Yeah. Let's talk about a little bit about your story.
Let's talk about you.
Let's take it. Let's take it back. Because this is
well, okay. So I'm born and raised in Sweden.
Yep.
My parents are evangelists, or they were evangelists, especially right now they're in retirement. But they 10 years before I was even born, 13 years before I was born, they were in full-time ministry. So my siblings grew up with them being away from Wednesday to Sunday, and they had a nanny those days because they were traveling all over the world doing that. So from a really early age, we started singing. I started singing when I was like 2. Music was a huge part of my family, and obviously Christianity was as well. And from a very early age, we always talked about traveling as a family. we talked that one day as a family we're going to get into an RV and we're going to just travel around the world and sing. And so we kind of grew up knowing or hoping that that was going to happen. That was like our entire world.
Right.
And then when I was three, we won green cards in the lottery. So there was literally just like a computer that chose our names at random. And my parents had felt a call from like, I think like 1979. My dad got this prophecy and that they were like, you're going to go to America and you're going to sing. And so he had that in his heart. And so when we won in the lottery, that was a huge, you know, they were like, okay, we're going to do this. We got like a letter from George Bush, I think was the president at the time, and literally was like, I don't think it was a handwritten letter, but he had signed it physically and we just had the green cards in this envelope. It's like, I don't think they've ever done it again in that way. It was like,
that's crazy.
91. Yeah. So we moved over to Florida of all places. Because we had connections there and we kind of moved back and forth my entire life from Sweden. But when I was nine, I remember my dad pulled up, he had bought this RV and he's like, we have 10 shows booked and we're just going to go and see what happens. And we ended up being fully booked for like 5 years.
What the hell?
Yeah. So we traveled. Just my entire upbringing was the four siblings and my parents in this RV. And we traveled around and we did probably 5 services a week. And so ministry was definitely at the forefront of my entire life. That was my everything. Like right. And obviously, you know, everyone that I hung out with, every person that I was involved with anything was only Christians, and really only Christians from a specific denomination. We were in Church of God a lot and then Assemblies of God. So like, that was kind of like the worldview of those denominations was completely where my mind was at always.
Right.
So from as far back as I can remember, the first, I guess, sexual thought that I had was maybe when I was 6, I don't know, and it was about a guy, and I didn't think anything of it at that time, because no one had really spoken to me about that, because I don't think anybody in my family was assuming that that was going to happen, because that's their worst nightmare, you know, but so I never really thought about it, and I remember when I was 7 was the first time that somebody spoke negatively about homosexuality, or they said like, that's disgusting or that's gross. And immediately that was the first time that I had felt shame about it, because I knew that I was interested in guys and I saw guys in that way.
Right.
And that was the first time that I started to kind of close myself in, and I started to get really insecure about especially the way that I behaved. I was more feminine. I was a more feminine guy. Right, I wasn't interested. My dad's a contractor. So like, and both my brothers worked construction with him as well.
Super manly.
And yeah, exactly. So it's like, I felt like, and my dad is the most wonderful human being on the planet. And I looked up to him so much. And of course I wanted to be like him, but I just couldn't, I just wasn't that guy. Like I wanted to sit out and write poetry. Like I didn't, you know, care about cars. He'd be like, "Do you like that Mustang?" I'd be like, "What the hell?" I'm like, "That looks like a car. Like, I don't know what that
it's
is."
It's a car, Dad. Yeah.
So I started really early, from age 7, to start building up slowly a hate for myself, because not only were the people around me saying that it was awful or disgusting, God said that, and so number one, I felt like, okay, these people think this about me. My family thinks this about this issue, but also God hates me because he hates sin. He hates this. And so I think for, gosh, 10, 12 years, I was feeling just self-hatred build up. I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror when I was like 14 because I could not be the person that my family wanted me to be. I pretended really well, I think, but I mean, people are ruthless, especially in school. So it's like, from very early on, it was like, faggot always, like, or like, you're really feminine, or like, you're going to be gay when you grow up. So I always had that as well, on top of already feeling that way. And I was trying to fight against it so much. I was doing everything in my power to like, that people would think that I was straight. And I know a lot of gay people can relate to that, because we joke about it all the time. Because literally, like, the things that we tried to do was like, so extravagant. Like, I saw this thing, like, the other day, there was, like, it was a joke on a meme, and it was, like, a rainbow staircase, and there was this guy that, like, didn't want to walk on it, so he was climbing these huge other steps to not have to walk on it, and it was, like, what we tried to do in middle school to, like, prove that we weren't gay.
Yeah.
That's literally what it was for us. And so I was still in ministry, so I think my mindset was okay, like it went from going like, this is complete sin, like I can't be this, and I pushed it away and I couldn't deal with it at all. So I was trying to tell myself that I was attracted to women and, you know, would make out with people. And if I felt even an ounce of anything, I'm like, okay, like good, like I got a little bit turned on. So like maybe, you know, it's going to be good. Like I'm going to get past this, whatever. So that was kind of my mindset. And I continued with that. I went to Bible college, and like there, the Bible college I went to was in Minnesota, and they were pretty adamantly against it. And so I think at that point when I was in college, I was like, okay, this is a struggle that I have, and like everyone struggles, and like, you know, God's going to help me through this. That was my mindset. And one of my oldest friends, we talk about this all the time, cause we were both gay, and we were both like, we've gone through every phase together. Mm. We've gone from the phase of like praying together, being like, please God, take this away. And then now we're both like gay, living that. And we talk about that all the time, cause we've kind of gone through the entire process together. But so I was still in ministry, and I kind of quit college cause I wanted to do artistry. And because I had been in ministry, the only option in my mind was Christian music. So I remember the first time I met you actually wasn't when we met 10 years ago. It was like 14 years ago, and it was at GMA's, and I was like,
really?
17 or something. Yeah. Or 18. And I had gone down there, and I was like, this is what I'm going to do. So I ended up going back to Sweden when I was 18, and I met this girl there, and we just ended up really connecting on a friendship level, and we really liked each other. But also there was a lot of pressure, I think, for both of us around the fact that we needed to get married. And like, and it wasn't that, I don't feel like my parents were forcing me, because I remember them saying like, is this moving too fast? But I think for me, I was like, this is my chance to like, now, you know, I have somebody that I really like. I told her that I was attracted to men before we were married. And she was like, okay, like we're going to work through this together. So I felt like, okay, like I'm going in pretty honest within this situation. And I, you know, like we can do this. And I really liked her. I thought she was great. But we both felt, even when I proposed to her, I was like unsure, like, cause I felt like I was just going through the motions. So I was like, I like got on my knee, and I was like, in my mind, I was like, do you want to marry me? And in my head, I'm like, I think, like, I don't know. And I remember like her response was like, oh frick. Like that was her verbal response to it. And so I think we both got caught up in this like romanticized version of something, which wasn't even romantic. It was just a romanticized version of what we thought marriage was supposed to be, or what it was supposed to feel like. And it never really felt like that, but we just kept pushing forward anyway. And so I think it was like a year after we met, but like 9 months after we started dating, we got married. And I had never had sex. I had never done anything. And so it was, you know, I was very nervous about it, but not that nervous. I was like, it's going to be fine. Like, we're going to figure this out. And after the very first night, I was like, oh shit, like this is not going to work. Like, this is not what I always had hope in my mind. I'm like, this is going to work out, because we've done this now, like we've committed to this, like let's at least, I would never want to just like leave. I want to try. And we had a lot of, I mean, so many issues throughout our marriage, on not just a sexual basis, but just like anybody. We were 19 and 20 getting married. Like there was so much stuff. And she had a lot of expectation. I had a lot of expectation that it's supposed to look and be this way. And I was pretty much like, I would say the first month or two of my marriage was probably the most depressed I've ever been in my entire life, because I was like, everything felt so wrong. Mm. And my entire life I had been taught that sex was bad and to stay away from it. And then all of a sudden, because I got married, the next day my parents were like, have fun tonight. It's like, you can't just switch your brain that quickly.
No, we've had that conversation.
Yeah. So I, on top of being gay in this situation, but not really understanding my gayness, I'm also feeling guilty about having sex in general, because my entire life I felt guilty about it. So it's like, you can't just switch over all of a sudden and be like, now because we're married, it feels fine. Like, even though I knew it was, you know, according to whatever, it just still felt wrong and felt weird. And I just felt like I was sinning still. Mm. And I think she felt that way too. And she had such a romanticized view of what it was going to be. And so this was like devastating to her. Like it wasn't romantic. It wasn't nice. It felt awful. And so it went a few years, and I think that we really found each other in our friendship, because we're still best friends, and she is one of the closest people in my life to me. And I think that we found ourselves there. And so we're like, okay, like I really love this person. I genuinely was in love with her, like 100%. And that's what kept us going for as long as we were together anyway.
Cause you guys married 10 years.
10 years. Yeah. And so, but then it was like, I think 3 years into it, the intimacy just wasn't really working the way that we wanted it to. And so I started to go elsewhere. And like, and it was the first time that I had even like considered it. And it was the most horrible feeling in the world. I had never been with anybody. So I started getting on apps and like looking up guys. And like, at first I would be like, oh, like we'll just talk and like, that'll be it. And then I'll be like, oh, we'll just, I'll say I'm going to meet them and then I won't. And then I'm like, I'll meet them. But then right before anything happens, I'll leave. Like, so it was like these, this process. And then it ended up being like, oh, like we'll just kiss. And then it's like, oh, we'll just do that. And then it just, all of a sudden it's like, you've done everything.
Right.
It's like, okay. You know? And so on top of this, I'm in the Christian industry, like, and like doing pretty well and like having number ones on CHR and like traveling full time and like literally after the concerts, like meeting up in bathrooms with guys. Like it was completely living a double life in a way that was unfair to me, to unfair to Anna, unfair to everybody in the situation, and unfair to the people that were listening to me, because I'm like, I was completely portraying something that wasn't the truth. And it wasn't that the things that I was singing about with God wasn't the truth. It was. All my experiences with God and all my experiences that I was singing about were completely authentic. But again, because people look at you being gay and they make everything about that, I made everything about that. And I felt like because I was gay, nothing I was doing was valid or nothing I was doing mattered.
Let me ask you something. Do you think that, so all of your, would you say that all of your attempts, all of this striving, all of the traveling with your family, the going to Bible college, mm-hmm. the marrying Anna. Did that come from like a pure like desire to just like, I want to make God happy?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it was my entire life. It was everything. And I knew, according to my worldview and what I was taught at that time, God couldn't love me if I was gay. So I'm like, I knew that either I had to choose to be what naturally I was and what I was feeling, or to choose something different so that God would love me, which is a whole lot of fucked up if you think about it, really, truly. I mean,
it's really difficult to go that long.
Yeah.
When I got saved, I had a hard time believing God loved me, but that's because I kept making dumb decisions. Mm-hmm. And I kept falling into quote unquote sin. And I've said this before in a podcast that, you know, I have to get over the idea that sin is acts and understand that sin is a state that we are born into.
Right.
Like you are born into a fallen state mm-hmm. of sin. This is now our lot in life. So right. The sinning acts are a byproduct of what is in us.
Right.
And so the idea, you know, like we've talked about it before this podcast, you know, there's a difference between sinning and living in sin. And I used to say that. Mm-hmm. I used to say people that a say lot. That,
and then you think about it and it doesn't actually make any sense.
Yeah, I'm like, wait.
What's the difference here?
So are we saying that there's a day that I didn't sin?
Right.
Because I'm like, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell. And I remember yesterday because yesterday happened. But I'm pretty sure I could probably count like four sins that I did yesterday, and then I couldn't even think the day before. So I'm like, I just don't remember any right. day I've lived in my life where I just didn't sin.
Right.
And so I know for myself, it was difficult for me to try to quote unquote not be living in sin.
Right.
So I think it's interesting that what you're saying is that, you know, that you've tried like your entire life trying to serve a God that everyone is telling you hates you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very, and again,
shit.
We're very, very happy to believe that too. Like happy to believe that that's the way God is growing up. Like I was like, look, this is just the way that it is. Like I can't be this way. And it was so like it perpetuated in my head because again, people constantly, and it wasn't like my family never said to me, like, you are disgusting or you like ever, like they're very, like, I'm so grateful for my parents and my family. They're very loving and incredible people. So I always had a safe space there, but they spoke about homosexuality like that. And that was a part of me. And that was something that I knew was there. And so in like, it felt like they were saying, you're disgusting and you're an abomination and you're this. And the more and more that you hear that, and then you're only around people that see things that way, it's, you start to believe that you are that way. And that's why I know that when I started to be sexually active within my marriage, it was because I had such an unhealthy view of sexuality. I was never taught about any, like, it was literally like, I just, it was just so unhealthy. The whole, and that's why I was doing all these unhealthy things, because I wasn't allowing myself to actually feel what I naturally felt. So it became this shameful, guilty, backseaty thing that it didn't even need to be if I would have actually been taught proper, healthy sexuality. And obviously that was really, really hard for me because I'm not a disloyal person, and it wasn't even about Anna. It had nothing to do with her, and she was my best friend, and I knew that what I was doing was going to hurt her, and that made it even worse for me. And like when I ended up telling her, I don't really think she understood right away, but I knew that it was easier for her that it had been men and not women, obviously. But I think throughout the process, we both went into it with her being completely against it and me being completely against it, really. Like, I didn't walk into my marriage and say, like, that this wasn't sin or whatever. Like, I felt like it was. So that's how I approach things. But then even after that phase, we kind of went into a new season of our marriage where we really became even closer, but again, as friends. And it's very easy sometimes to blur those lines because you have emotional feelings for somebody. Mm-hmm. I loved her, like, my goodness. And because we had such a close relationship, but it didn't mean that that was intimate or that that was romantic. It wasn't at all. And it just took us a really long time to figure that out. obviously, we had a child 3 years ago, the absolute joy of my life. And that's been the greatest, I mean, the most incredible thing in my life. I thought that I was unselfish before I got married. Then I realized I was super selfish. And then I thought I was pretty unselfish before I had a child. And then I was like, I was even more selfish. And so having her has been the most incredible experience. And so now, this was, gosh, so we met 11 years ago. And in March was our 10-year anniversary. We went out to dinner. We went down to Chattanooga. We had a great time. And we both, 3 days later, were just like, we need to talk. And we both felt unanimously at the same time, like, we're just best friends. And that's really all this is. And as hard as it is, we have to make a decision right now that's going to be the best for not only us, but for our daughter. And I think that a lot of people stay in marriage because they believe that that's what they have to do and that God's going to frown upon if they're not. And I realized that if we would have stayed in an unhappy marriage, because even though we loved each other and even though we were friends, we weren't in an unhappy marriage. Like, that wasn't what marriage is supposed to be. And we both deserve intimacy, which we didn't have. And so, I mean, since we decided that has been so up and down. We both really love each other and we're both determined to be friends. And a lot of people don't want us to be friends. Like, a lot of even people in our families were just kind of like, why are you friends? What do you mean? Like, when you divorce, it's over. And we're like, but who set that standard and that rule? Yeah. Why can't we be friends? And why is that weird? And obviously there's been up and down moments of feeling like, and the biggest thing for us is we love each other so much. So it's like, the hardest thing for us is realizing that things are going to change and that we're not going to always live together anymore. And we're not going to, you know, but...
Is she still in Sweden?
She's here.
She's back? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I don't look back on my marriage and think that it was a mistake. I don't. I think initially, if I were to advise somebody in my situation, I would probably say don't. But through this marriage, I found an incredible human being that I love, who I'm best friends with, and I got to have a daughter with that person. So regardless if other people now are going to come into the situation, I have this beautiful unit with my daughter and my best friend. And so I'm so grateful that I got to experience that in my life and that I got to have this beautiful gift in my daughter. but it's been so cool to see her viewpoint has changed tremendously. Like, she is on the opposite spectrum of what she was when we first started. And so am I. Mm-hmm. And I think exactly what you were saying, when you have people in your life, it's a lot easier to look at an issue or look at a person that you don't know anything about and hate them or point at them or not understand. But if you actually love somebody that's gay and you spend a lot of time with them, things automatically have to start changing in your head because you're kind of going, but that doesn't feel right. That I shouldn't feel that way about them. And why don't I? And you start to get confused. And I think that that was the big thing for Anna, because she knew that if this was a choice for me, I would have chosen her. Like, 100%, I love her. I would have chosen her. But it doesn't work like that. And I think that a lot of people that I talk to that ever feel like it's a choice don't know any gay people.
Those are common... Those are common arguments.
Yeah.
The reason I know is because I've said them before.
Right.
You know, it's a choice, you know. We all have cravings. We all have things that we want to do.
Yeah.
But we can say no to them, which is true, you know. But the only way I was able to understand it, and this is me taking it from another gay person telling me this, and then me assuming that his origin was the same as my origin, meaning there's never been a time in my life that I've ever been attracted to guys,
right.
ever.
Right.
And the idea of it is I've always been like, oh, man, like I look at the female form and I'm like, holy crap. Like it's so gorgeous.
Right.
And then my gay friend told me, okay, so you see that intense passion that you have, that part of you that you're like, how can anybody not like females?
Right.
Like they're so beautiful, right? Right? That kind of like, you don't get it. Now, imagine if you felt that way and then everything was reversed.
Right. And someone told you,
and someone told me,
you have to be with a man and you,
this is not the right way.
Right.
You gotta be with the man.
Yeah.
And I was like,
and imagine that turmoil.
I don't like that scenario at all. Right. Because I can't make my mind do that. Like,
right.
I can't just be like, all right, I don't like these girls no more. I'm gonna go over here because that's the right thing to do.
Right.
And when he presented that to me, that was the closest I have been to being able to at least have some type of
understanding
or even empathy for someone in that position. Because before, I don't think I took the time to just consider the humanity
right.
of it all.
Right.
It was always so political and so religious that it's like, I have to fall on one side of this thing and it has to be the right side. And if I'm on that right side, then I can no longer be associated with anyone from the other side.
Right.
And that's how I live my life until I married someone who I can't get away from it now,
because
this is family now.
Right.
And as I'm spending time with them, I'm freaking falling in love with these people. And it really messed up my whole system of thinking. I'm not upset about it.
Right.
You know, and I apologize if I sound so like, bruh, what the hell were you thinking before? But I think about the way the situation is now, you know, like the closest person that I see more on a consistent basis, you know, that is family would be my brother-in-law, Kenny,
mm-hmm.
and his boyfriend, Theo,
mm-hmm.
who I call Theopolis. Now, I remember one day I looked to Ange and I was like, babe, I hope your brother doesn't mess this up because I really like Theo. Like, that's literally what I'm thinking. I'm like, if Theo is out of my life, I'm going to be really sad.
Right.
Because me and him when we're at the family, when we meet up, you know, we're watching sports together. We're freaking going to movies together.
Right.
Like, we're doing all this crap. And I'm like, holy crap. Like, me and Theo are mad. Like, I love this dude. And it's really messing me up. And I think that's what it's been doing on a life level. It's forcing me to now confront my beliefs and ask myself, are my beliefs landing on the side of lack of a desire to understand, try to love, try to have some type of compassion, try to see someone who thinks differently than you as a human being, as opposed to someone who I can argue and be right over, you know what
right.
I'm saying? Like, and that's what it was before. My life was calculated, and I feel like, I don't want to speak for all Christians, but for the ones that I was close to, I feel like life becomes this game of angles to which we want to prove to ourselves and to these people that we are right in our way of thinking.
Right.
And if you don't think the way we do, then you are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened to me recently in a situation with my old band where my bandmate was like joined this new thing, this new religion, and was staunchly adamant that he was right.
Right.
And I sat back and I was like, man, he sounds so much like I do, like when I used to argue people.
Right.
And I said, man, how long have you been in this new religion, studying it? And he's like, you know, like the last 2 years. I'm like, cool. So what you're telling me is in 2 years, you have not only mastered the Bible, but you have mastered the languages the Bible was written in.
Right.
That you have mastered history, that you have mastered quantum physics, that you have mastered energy, that you have mastered probability. Because as much as all these things are close to being accurate, and theologians will tell you, yo, this book is as close to accurate as you can get. All these other history books that we follow, they weren't written as close to proximity as the Bible was written to these specific accounts. So, but it wasn't written right then and there.
Right.
So are you saying that you know that much, that you are that certain that you are right, and that you have zero doubt, not even an ounce of doubt, that you could be reading this scripture wrong? And he's like, well, you know, with the big things. And I'm like, no, not big things, just period.
Right.
Do you think that as you're reading this Bible, that you are 1,000%, that you are certain that there is zero error in your interpretation of what this book is saying?
Right.
And he had to be like, well, no, I can't, you know. I'm like, okay, so you're about what? 90% sure, 10% not sure.
Right.
Yeah, something like that. I think he even said like 95.5. I was like, okay, well, if you're 5% unsure, then you might as well be 50, because there's no halfway to be wrong.
Right.
There's no 5% wrong.
Right.
You're either right or you're wrong.
Right.
So you are 50-50 whether this new thing that you're doing is right or wrong. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Like, right, when it comes down to it. And he was like, yeah, 50-50. So am I. I am 50-50 that my interpretation of this Bible and Christianity is right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going with the knowledge that has been put in front of me, as much as I can research, as much as my brain can actually process. I am 50-50. That is the best that my odds can be. And even when I was talking to him, trying to prove a point to him, I was proving a point to myself. I was like, man, so all these things that you think, Manny, you could be dead wrong, bro.
Right.
So what is the answer? And I said before when we started, well, this isn't an answer of like, okay, what's right, or is this homosexuality thing right or wrong? Can a homosexual be a Christian? All that ish. This is as far as I've gotten. I don't even know the things that I, outside of that conversation, if I'm right on those things. So how can I now start traveling into different areas and start thinking, you know what? I'm not an expert in anything in life,
right,
but let me try and go be an expert in this area. I just started realizing that, man, what am I capable of? I'm capable of loving people despite our differences. I'm capable of loving you because that's what's required of me, like to love you like my creator loves you. I don't think he just accidentally made people. And I don't know if he's, I almost feel like if he was so pissed off, then he'd like another flood. And I guess it is coming. I guess the end is coming soon, and this episode is going to be a flood by fire, you know, like maybe that's the thing. And I'm like, it's like, I'm just loving people right now because I feel like that's the only thing I can get right. Right. I feel like that's the only thing that if you were to ask me, yo, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure of one thing, that I feel like people deserve love.
So one of the big things that I started to look at was, one thing that's really stood out to me in the Bible is the fruits of the Spirit. That's supposed to be the characteristics of God, which I never can think of all seven, but I know like gentleness and self-control and love and kindness and patience and faithfulness. And then I started to think about, okay, so being attracted to a man by itself, and people were like, the reason why it's not good, an argument that I've heard a lot, is because it doesn't bear any fruit. And they're just talking about physically children. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay, so you can't have children, but that's, there are a ton of people who can't have children that are straight.
Yeah, the argument is that it's out of natural order.
Right, exactly. And so for me, I realized, okay, but the fruit of a situation, the fruit to me is a lot more than children. The fruit of a situation should be what the result of something is. Mm-hmm. And if the result of something or the root of something is good, I think the fruit will be good. And so I started to think about homosexuality, and I started to think about all the people that I have in my life that are in committed and loving relationships. And I saw, you know, a straight couple adopting a child and hating that child and abusing that child and them growing up feeling so much stuff because of the way that they were raised. And then I saw a gay couple raise a child and they raised them with love and with kindness and they ended up being a great person. That's a good fruit. So in my mind, I said, how on earth, why would God not be in that when there is love and when the fruit of it is so good? Why would God not be in that just because they can't physically have children? So that was kind of the beginning. I remember that was my first thought that really took me toward an acceptance of myself. And because I realized, I'm like, okay, but maybe it's just a lot bigger than just black and white. This is right and this is wrong. Maybe there's a lot more layers to these things than just that. And for me, that started me down my path of self-acceptance and self-love. And I will tell you right now, I am not going to be one of those people that sits here and says, no, I've mastered self-love. Sure. And I hate myself so much still. But I know that little by little, day by day, I have started to really love myself more. And I think when I was younger, people looked at me and I was completely defined by my gayness. And therefore, I defined myself completely by my gayness. And now I feel like me being gay is a part of who I am. It doesn't define me. It's a part of who I am. It's something that I love about myself. And I think that people ask me, like, if you could be straight, would you? Not in a million years, because I finally have gotten to a place where I say, you know what? Who I am and the reason that I'm here, I love that. And I'm okay with that. And the moment that I remember a moment when we decided to get a divorce was the first time that I ever allowed myself to think about being with a man on an emotional level. Mm. Like, I always told myself, no, it's just sexual. That's why it's wrong, because I'm only sexually attracted to men. I don't want to be in a romantic relationship with a man. But it's because I never allowed myself to think on that line of thinking. So when I finally allowed myself to do that and I went out on my first date with a guy, it was like the most natural thing I have ever experienced in my life. And I was like, oh my God, I could have been doing this the whole time. But I don't feel like that, because I look back at my marriage, I look back at my child, and I'm so utterly grateful for the things that I've gotten to experience. And I wouldn't be here now. I wouldn't be in the place that I'm at if I weren't to have experienced those things. And right now, I'm definitely at a place with the church where I realize how hurt I've been, and I'm slowly, very slowly finding my way back. And I want to believe that people can see past their preconceived notions about an issue. And like you said, see the human underneath, because it's difficult because I tried like maybe a year and a half ago to be involved in a church, and they were like, we accept everyone, like we love you, mm-hmm. but you can't be around the children and you can't be on the worship team. And it's just like, those kinds of things, that's almost like a slap, and that's not accepting me.
Man, that happened in another situation my friend told me about. Which, look, man, look, I get it. If you're an organization, if you're a church and you haven't resolved it yet,
right?
I get it. You don't want them on stage. You don't want them, okay, cool. But are you taking their tithe?
Right, right.
And, because if you don't want them on stage, and that's my problem. That is my one problem. Look, B is whatever is you want. Like, if you want to not have them on stage, not whatever, cool. But you for damn sure better not be taking their tithe either.
Right.
Be like, because if this ain't holy, the tithe ain't holy either.
Right.
And yeah, then and that so, other situation, the church was like, well, you know, that's different. Well, how is that different?
Right.
You take a person for everything or you don't. And that's interesting that you're, you know, finding your way back, because I too have, and I never left. I just left the industry of church.
Well, same. That was, I mean, same, honestly, right? Though, Manny, that was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like, I won't be going back there. But
yeah.
But I think in general, I've had to realize that my biggest thing in my life that I want, when I die, whenever that is, I want people to say about me, his arms were always open. He didn't point fingers. He was a faithful friend. He was a kind human being. That beyond any accolades or my talent level, I want to be what people say about me. And I realized that for so many years, I was so bitter and angry at Christians, and I blanket statemented them. I did so many things that I hated that people did about me, and I was doing the exact same thing back. And I realize now I have so many Christians in my life that are so amazing, that truly show the love of Jesus, that are and that accept me and love me for who I am, because they trust me and they trust the person that is going through something, the person that is something. They're trusting my word, because the thing is, if you're not gay, you don't know what it feels like to be gay.
Right.
The only thing that what your friend said to you, the only thing that I could say is that you being straight and what that feels like is the exact same thing. And all you have to do is just trust the people that are talking to you saying, this is how it is. Because people can say until they're blue in the face that I'm living in rebellion or that I'm choosing this, but it still won't be true. Like they can say it as much as they want. And even the Bible can say it, but it doesn't change the fact that this is true. Like I wouldn't, like, honestly, and my wife, she knows now, because she lived with me for 10 years. She knows me inside and out. And she knows that if I had a choice in the matter, I would have chosen her.
I've thought about that too, you know, because when I did used to say people have a choice, I used to think, if you did have a choice, why would you choose to be gay?
And to be ridiculed by everyone. And then to
be a Christian.
Right.
Exactly. If I had a choice to be gay, and I said, you know what, I want to be gay, the last thing I'm going to say is I want to be gay and I want to love Jesus.
Right.
And I want to go into the church. I wouldn't want to do that.
Right.
Why would you want to wish that upon anybody? Yeah, like you wouldn't. And look, man, I've never been gay. I'm never whatever, you know. But when I try to think of it on a human level, when I try to think of it as myself, of somebody saying, hey, man, think about how you are and the normalcy to which you live your life. Mm-hmm. You wake up, you kiss your wife, mm-hmm. you love on her.
Yeah.
You do all the things heterosexuals do
right.
without even thinking.
Because it's the same.
It just feels whatever. And then the telling
thing.
Me that now I have to think the other way. Like now I have to.
Yeah. And not only but being held over your head that if you're going to be able to be in leadership, if you're going to be loved by God, if you're going to be loved by your family, by your friends, or you're going to burn in hell. Like these are the things that are held over your head. You're going to be tortured in a burning hell because of something that you can't even control. And everyone around you is telling that you can control it. And how dare you be so rebellious to choose this in your life? And it's just like the amount of people that I know that have been so close to suicide, including myself, right. and the amount of people that have committed suicide because of it. And people just go, that's so sad. If they only would have found God. You know what I'm saying? And they don't realize the immense pressure that is put on you. Because in general, sometimes Christianity, in religion in general, can be... I mean, the expectations are so high. I don't know how anybody thinks they can live up to them.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you need.
I thought about... I'm not really a suicidal thinker. But there was a couple times, and it ain't even about
right.
being gay or not gay.
Right.
It's just about not being able to live up to a standard, which is why I am so amazed at people who have the Christian balls to get online and slander and judge and say the worst things. I'm like, don't you know that if you're gonna be so about the word, the Bible warns us about being accountable. Like God is going to hold us accountable for every word that we say. And I used to be that guy. I never was that online guy because I just think that's cowardice.
Well, you were too old for that.
Yeah, I was too old. You're right. No, good call. But when social media came in, even like I just couldn't. If I saw something that I thought differently, nothing in me thinks I'm going to get online and start hating people or start saying negative things. If I really cared about that person or if I cared about where they were at in life, I would shoot them a private message. If I knew them, I would shoot them a text. you know, because I am genuinely concerned about their life or their thought patterns or whatever. I wouldn't go online in this pseudo attempt of being a Christian and, oh, I'm calling out that which I see is wrong. You know, this is what the Bible teaches us to do. I'm like, fool, in the Bible, people had to know each other to call out the wrong.
Right.
They didn't have Instagram.
Right.
They weren't able to see what homeboy was doing in Corinth and living in Jerusalem. Like, it didn't happen.
In Corinth.
You know, like, the only people that could call you out, the people that, when the Bible's talking about doing that, it's because it's assuming that you are in community with this person. Back then, there was no other way.
Right.
There was no other way for you to know what somebody else was doing in their life, unless you were walking that life with them. So yes, if someone is saying, I am professing to be this, you would see that they are not. Why? Because you are living in community with them. They can't hide it.
Right.
We now translate that into the future and say, okay, now I can see into your Instagram and that which you show me, I can now make an accurate assessment of who you are.
I'm a brother or sister in Christ.
And I'm just like, who was I talking to yesterday where I said this? Oh, AT&T, a random dude at AT&T, manager, who now we're friends. I was asking him, I was like, if you really thought, if you Christians, Christian police, if you really think that Instagram is the place that you're able to make an accurate assessment of somebody, then I think you are so misled, because Instagram is the epitome of fake. Like, we only show you
the literal epitome.
Have you ever gone to an Instagram page and seen a guy, which most men do, seen a guy take a pic of him and his genitalia being like, Friday night, just here masturbating. This is what I struggle with.
So true.
Have you ever seen that?
Nope, because it would be banned.
It would be, you would never, and those of you who struggle with it, you would never do that. Let me be authentic. I'm going to be a real Christian. I'm going to be real. Instagram is the place to be real. Here's my pornography sites that I visit. Here are my fetishes. I just wanted you to know, because Instagram is where we're real, and I need you guys to now comment and keep me accountable. That has never happened in the history of Instagram.
Right.
And but it yet, won't ever happen.
And I think that all of us know that, but yet we still look at Instagram thinking that that's the way
this
that
is real. Yeah. And I have to comment on this real.
Yeah.
Because this, I was having a conversation with a brother, which I'm glad, I think we resolved it. I think we came into a good resolution. But he listened to a song I did. I just released Yellow Bike, and it's about a friend of mine, my old bandmate, who had sex with an older lady, and he was younger. He was in high school, and she was a stripper, 25 years old, and it's technically rape.
Right.
Dudes don't see that as rape. Right. We see that as a complete score.
Yeah.
At least the dudes that I know. I'm sorry. I'm not speaking for all guys. Most of the dudes that I have been growing with, I was fourth grade, and I learned how to kiss from an eighth grader, you know, like... That was a freaking,
I just did it.
It's instantly like, good on you. Like, you're awesome. But it wasn't the case. And so I wrote this song because we started thinking, man, there's probably people who have not had a positive experience with it. Like, it probably pushed them into sexuality too soon.
Right.
And now they're dealing with the repercussion of that. If it happened to you, it's happened to other people.
Right.
And so I write this song, extremely graphic, very much. And I get these Christians hitting me up, quoting the lines, 25, she was 25 starting high school, in quotes, like, and disappointed. And I'm like, did you listen to the song?
Right.
Do you know what I'm trying to bring awareness to?
Right.
This guy quoted my own Group One lyrics to me, where in the lyrics I say, I just need God. I'm trying to find my way back to God or whatever.
My God.
And he puts that on my page.
To me all the time.
And I'm like, what are you trying to say, bro? Like, are you trying to be subversive? Like, if you got a problem, say it. I'm forward.
Right.
Just tell me straight up. Right. What are you trying to say? Oh, it's just different how much we've changed, you know? And I'm like, did you even listen to the song?
Right.
Do you know what it's about?
But no, because they hear trigger words. There's trigger words. If you say a swear word or if you say something that's about an adult thing, because we come from, it's a very family oriented everything. So everything has to be accessible and everything has to be appropriate for your 8-year-old. But there are a lot of adult things that an 8-year-old doesn't need to listen to. And
sure,
it's your responsibility. If you don't want to listen to something or you don't want your child to listen to something, then don't let them listen to it. You can't eliminate all of that stuff. And I get the one that's people's favorite. I get this one literally. And what I say all the time, maybe daily, I get somebody quoting, our hearts are in Babylon Because I guess that was one of my songs. And the funny thing is, that song was actually, like, I'm completely in the same mindset as when I wrote that song.
Right.
I wasn't talking about the world. I was talking about the church when I was saying our hearts are in Babylon, because we're not loving and accepting people. That's where that was coming from. So the thing is, people interpret whatever they want to interpret, and they took it as that, and they use that as, like, a weapon against me. Or they'll be like, I'm so disappointed in you. And I'm like, who are you?
Disappointed?
Like, I don't know who you are.
You don't even know my middle name.
Right, exactly.
What are you disappointed? Look, luckily this guy came back and was like, I'm sorry. Like, he's like, I did make, because I told him, I was like, bro, maybe you do a little research before you make ignorant statements. Like, right. Just talk to me. I have never shied away from talking to anyone. DM me if you really care about me. Don't comment. Don't put it in the comments, because you're just trying to, you're just getting thirsty at that point. DM me. Ask me what did I mean by a certain lyric? What did I mean by this? Mm. Or why am I doing this? I had somebody say that to me. Why are you cussing in your songs now? And I said, I'm doing a language study right now.
Language study.
I am. I'm being 100% authentic. You want to know why? Because I listen to people like Bellion, John Bellion. I listen to people like Chance the Rapper. Love. And these people move me in my spirit. Like, move me. And I'm
the,
like,
human
why do I feel
changed my life?
Yeah, literally. Like, why do I feel the spirit in this stuff? I remember DMX put out a song back in Bible college that I used to pray to, you know? And I'm like, DMX is spitting some word right now. And I would always be like, really, like, why am I feeling you through these songs, God? Like, there's cussing and there's whatever. And I'm like, is there something I'm not getting? And that's what my study is. Mm. And I don't cuss just to cuss. I don't do that. My journey is, my journey is authenticity. There were times when I was writing in the Christian space and I would really want to say this word. And maybe it wasn't a cuss word, maybe it was a cuss word, but it definitely was a word that wasn't considered appropriate to Christians. But it was how I felt.
Right.
And I always had to change those words into whatever a simile for that word would be. Mm. And I always felt that I did the song a disservice when I would listen back, because I would be like, that wasn't how I felt. And as much as other people liked it, what they liked was a word watered down version of where my heart was at or where my mind was at. I don't think the Lord is scared of my disappointment or my anger or my frustration. You know, I tell a story. One time I was outside of church and I was arguing with my girlfriend and I just screamed out. I was so mad. And I said this in another podcast. Like, I screamed out. I was like, fuck, like in front of everyone. And they made me leave home. They made me leave. They're like, go home, calm down. But I was so angry that to say something else in that moment, if I would have been like, fudge.
Yeah.
It would have been
like comedy.
Are
it
you
would have
serious? Lessened the,
yeah.
That's not how you feel.
Well, and I think the mistake that people make, though, is that we're putting God in a box of the last 150 years of culture. Because people decided 150 years ago that these words were inappropriate. That wasn't in Jesus' time.
At all.
People have decided that these words. And the thing is this, everything is about intent. I can say to you,
that's what I'm
you're
meaning.
A poo-poo head. But if I mean that with genuine, that I really just want to hurt you and disdain, that is the problem.
Yep.
If I say, fuck my toe, that has nothing to do. It's the intent of the words.
100%.
And people have made it about just the word itself. And they get, and we've created a culture of offense where the soon as we hear something that we don't line up with or that we don't, we get offended.
Instead and we're of American. Right. Because in Sweden, I'm sure it's different, but like this is where I did my study. I was like, what are some words that we say that would be offensive in another culture? And so I looked up like the word fanny in London means pussy.
Right.
To us, it's that like, is a cute little fanny. Way to say a butt.
Yeah.
We would say that to our children.
Because it's all about culture. And
it's culture.
Like in Sweden,
exactly.
In Sweden, American curse words are literally a joke. Like
exactly.
5-year-olds say that.
It's exactly. Not... that's what I'm trying to say. Like, whose culture is right? Because we live in America, we've been taught that our culture, we are quote unquote the saviors of the world. We're right. the freedom fighters. We are sending missionaries to the outer parts of the funny? Whatever.
My family, we were missionaries from Sweden to America. And let me just tell you, America needed it.
Yo, and that's what I'm trying to say. Like, how can we then as a culture be like, well, the Bible wasn't written in our language, but we choose to pretend that it's language and our point of view. Like
four languages.
It's our point of view that's real. And that's the thing that I cannot contend with. For right. these, like you said, these words didn't exist in biblical time. The Bible warns us of calling each other fools.
Right.
Or actually cursing. When they talked about cursing, they meant cursing.
Like, yeah.
Like I curse you.
Exactly.
Like, I don't want good for you to happen.
Very, very different.
And it happens.
Yeah.
Those same people that are coming, that may say something about me cussing, will curse me in that statement.
Right.
They will deem something over me. Yeah. They will tell me that I'm not a Christian. They will tell me that I no longer have the Father's favor, that I'm not going to heaven because I am cussing. So they are cursing me in there, trying to reprimand me or to help me or to rebuke me.
Right.
And I'm like, this is some messed up crap.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah. It doesn't. You will gladly curse someone. You will gladly go online and tell someone. There is people that are going to hear this, and in their minds, and it may even travel to their fingers and to their keyboards, they will curse you. They will curse me for having this conversation. And then say, but bless you at the end.
I know. But, I hope God's favor but bless rains you. Upon you.
I don't like to use that kind of coarse language, but I will curse the hell out of you. I will tell you you're not Christian. I will tell you you're not saved.
You're gonna burn it
down. I will literally pronounce your eternity over your life.
Because of a word.
Because you said shit.
Right.
But I don't say shit.
Right.
So I'm okay, but I will curse you to hell.
Right.
And they think they're holy. They think they're fighting the fight.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wow. Yeah. So in that same sense, in that same regard, What I hope people can get from this, I hope that somehow they can let go of anger for a second, or let go of the desire of being right, or let go of the anger if they've even listened this far. Because I've had people hit me up and say, oh, I listened to the first 10 minutes and I couldn't hear the rest because I didn't hear what I wanted to hear. I would hope that they can get to this end. And just for a second, man, let it all go. Mm. And just decide to hear someone and feel their pain, feel their empathy. I get it that you may be attracted to women, but if you've ever been in a place where your family is disappointed with you, the church that you're at isn't accepting of you, the person that you're with is not accepting of you, that people don't believe that you're saved, that you don't believe you're saved, those are all the exact same emotions that Jonathan has described he has felt. But if you're letting the fact that he's gay keep you from identifying with him, then I really don't think it's him who has the problem. And that's the biggest reason I wanted to have this conversation, was not to try to usurp right or wrong. And I know people are going to be upset that I'm not calling something right or wrong. If you want to call something right or wrong, if you feel like you have the knowledge, if you feel like you have the understanding of it all, cool. There's some things happening in my life, and there's some people in my life that I meet on a consistent basis that is forcing me to change my terminology and my way of viewing things. And do I consult God about it every day? 100%. I ask God, what's going on, bruh? Mm. And the only thing I can come back to is that he built me to love people. And I believe the grace that I have for people is a gift. God. It's like a real gift, because it's really hard for me to find someone that I have anything against. I don't have anything against anybody. Even my enemies, I'm like, they hate me. They may dislike me, but I don't dislike them.
Right.
As much as they try to end my career or they're angry with me, and if they saw me, they're probably still talking crap about me to this day. Mm-hmm. But I don't sit up at night thinking about them. I'm not upset with them. I'm not whatever. I'm very much, you know, in this way. So I think that's what I'm realizing about my life, is that I'd rather be someone who loves people and allows God to show me what he wants me to be in their life. And if it's just a friend, if it's just a human being that is willing to walk with you, then that's what I want to be, more so than let me win this argument.
Right.
Let me show you that you're wrong and I'm right. I'm just,
and one of the more room for that. And one of the biggest things that I think I got to in my life, in conclusion of everything, is I think I thought that Jesus's followers and God were synonymous, and that meant that because they feel that way about me and that God feels that way about me. Mm-hmm. And that's the lie that I believed for a really long time. And I know that God loves me, that God sees me, that he knows me. And this is a meme that goes around all the time, but I think it's so good. It's okay to live a life that other people don't understand.
Right.
Because you know, I know what's going on the inside of my heart. I know who I am, and I know who God says I am. And so it doesn't really matter if anyone else says that I'm living in rebellion, or that I'm this or that I'm that, or that I'm not going to inherit this or that. It's not. I finally have started to get to the point where it's okay that they see it that way. And you know what? I respect you. I respect the way you see things. And even if you don't respect me, I respect myself.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the biggest thing. And I know the pain of feeling constantly rejected and feeling constantly unloved for something that you can do nothing about. And the moment that I finally got to the place where I said, you know what? I love myself. I love who I am. I wouldn't change it for the world, not for a second. And I am also a very lucky person because I have so much support around me from Christians and non-Christians, from people in general. Even my parents, who fully don't agree with me being gay, they treat me with kindness and love and respect, and they tell me that they are proud of me on a daily basis. And so I am so utterly grateful. And even in my marriage that I was in, me and Anna are on such good terms, and she supports me and she loves me and she advocates for me, and she knows me because she was in it with me. Yeah. She knows the truth. And so the biggest thing that I could say to anybody, this is obviously my experience, this is what I've gone through, this is my perception of things, but for anybody obviously that's gay, you know what's going on the inside of your heart. You know what this feels like. You know who you are. And maybe you don't know who you are yet, but I hope to God that you're surrounding yourself with people who are seeing you at the depth of your humanity and who you are. Because honestly, you are not defined by your sexual orientation. That doesn't define your worth at all. The only thing that really defines your worth is how you see yourself and how God sees you. Yeah. You know?
And you know what, bro? I'm proud of you because I've seen it all.
You have.
You know, and I think the thing that makes me more proud is I honestly don't think if I was in your shoes that I would have made it. I'm glad you didn't kill yourself.
I'm glad I didn't.
I'm glad. And it seems very light to say it that way. I mean, it should be said with a lot more heaviness. I don't know. I don't have the emotion to go there right now.
Yeah.
I know when me and Anne's got married, we did this honeymoon video. You can still see it on YouTube. It's the Honeymooners video. And we just answer questions back and forth of some stuff. And if you read in the comment section, the amount of assholes and just whack-ass people, dudes, like, oh, he's gay. He's gay. I'm going to be real sad for her when she wakes up one day and she finds out he's gay.
Right.
Just from that one. And I got so angry. Like, I wish I could like see these people in person and like put hands on them, you know, like,
right.
Because I'm like, this is what you do. Like, this is what you do with your time. Because a person's voice is higher or they have like whatever. This is like sad and it made me really angry. And that's just one video.
Right.
So when I say I'm proud of you, I say it because I'm proud that you've maneuvered life this whole time and have gone through a gamut from, you know, from Christian family band to Christian touring musician to married, being gay, cheating with gay men in your marriage, then coming back and still trying to make it work. And all of this in an attempt to please a God that everyone is telling you doesn't love you anyways.
Right.
And you're still here. I only look at you with like pride. Like, man, you know what? I'm proud to know you. I'm proud to see your journey. Like I said at the beginning of this, I was scared to even talk about this for fear of what people say, but the thing that kept me okay with it is that I love you. Hmm. And I'm gonna be your friend after this anyway. So it's like, well, this is it. I'm in his life. This ain't like a fake thing. This right. is not me bringing in somebody I don't know and I'm not doing life with.
Right.
I'm doing life with you at this point, and I want to. And so I'm proud of you. I'm proud of everything that you're doing.
Thank you.
I'm proud of your search. You know, I'm proud that you accept me for all my shortcomings, you know, all my crap that I have. And I hope that you continue to do that work to lose all the hate for yourself and find that the fullness of how much God wants to love you and wants to be a part of your life. And for anybody listening, I hope for those of you who may be feeling trapped, caught, hated, mainly by yourself or by other people, I really do hope you find some kind of solace and comfort in the fact that you're not alone and that people have gone through this and have come out of it successfully. For those of you who feel like he has come out of it unsuccessfully for whatever your religious belief, there's room for you at the table too. I was you. So,
and so was I.
I don't want you to feel like we think you're stupid or we think that you're whatever, like, cause then we would just be doing to you, but we hate being done to us. So if you agree or you disagree, we love you. As long as you treat us with respect, we'll treat you with respect. And all ideals, all ideologies are welcome here at the table. So based on the response to this, I'll take this to the table and bring it in front of my other compadres. And maybe we'll have another guest on who maybe thinks on the other side of things and see what they have to say. And keep this conversation happening because I feel like it's an inevitability. Like it's a conversation that is already happening.
Yeah.
And if we're afraid to talk about it, then I think we're doing a disservice to ourselves and the people that we say that we love. So thank you for listening. Please subscribe on YouTube. If you're not, please subscribe on everywhere where you listen to podcasts. We are so appreciative and we hope that you gave this whole episode a listen to. If you want to check out Andreas Mas, I'm going to put the link at the bottom of the YouTube video and in the podcast link will be in there as well. So you can check out his music, his videos, all his stuff. He's been doing it for a while. So support him. Once you hear him sing, you will freaking crap your pants. That's all I'm going to say. Thank you so much, Jonathan.
Yes.
I love you, brother. It's been a good time. And yes. Everybody, enjoy yourselves. Love you so much. Bye.
It was a cool night, feeling a soft breeze. Yeah, it was you and me. Music was turned up, dropping the top down. Yeah, man, it felt free. Your hand moves up to my head. Not a care in the world, mine moves to your leg. We ain't got a time that we gotta be back. People kill for a piece of what you and me have. Woo! it feel good.
Don't it feel good?
Oh.